All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are recapping the Falcons' loss to the Saints in Week 3. I am joined by none other than the Falcoholic podcast host, Corey Woodruff. We're going to talk about Sunday's action.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, hello. Oh, sorry.
Hey, no problem, Corey. You know, just jump on in. I will give you a second to speak in a second. Okay, just pump your brakes. No, kidding. For those of you listening to the first time, you don't know who I am. I'm Aaron Freeman. I've been covering the Falcons for a very long time at FalcFans.com, been on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, I'm the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Now, Corey, you can speak and tell the people who you are.
Hello! If you have not heard my voice before on either Aaron's show or the one that I do over at The Falcoholic, I'm Corey Woodruff, a writer and podcaster for The Falcoholic and just a general, rabble-rouser on Falcons Twitter. So happy to be on, Aaron, as always.
Yeah, I think we're going to be doing a home-and-home. You're on my podcast, I'm on your podcast, so definitely go check out, you know, the one time that you want to check out a Falcoholic podcast this week might be it, just because I'm going to be there.
Grr.
But we're going to talk about this Falcons Saints game. The Falcons obviously lost in overtime. Impressive offensive performance, not so impressive defensive performance. A couple of breakdowns in special teams also arguably contributed to the loss. We will also sort of touch upon the breaking news, although I don't think anybody went to bed, you know, hope springs eternal, but I think most people went to bed last night expecting the news about Ricardo Allen being done for the season with an Achilles tear. We'll definitely talk about that, as well as some of the other injuries that have affected this team and how this team can sort of, you know, navigate those troubled waters. But let's start off with a positive, and let's talk about the offense. And Corey, I will cede you the floor to tell the listeners what you thought watching the Falcons offense on Sunday, what you've thought about the Falcons offense so far in this 2018 season.
Yeah, a lot of surprises. I really was honestly not expecting. I was expecting them to get it together and look competent, because I really felt like Steve Sarkisian would be a decent offensive coordinator at the end of the day. No, but I think one of the big things that we weren't expecting was that Sarkisian was going to be able to put 30 points in consecutive weeks against good divisional defenses. That is a wonderful development. I think when you look at the difference in that Philly game where they obviously struggled in the red zone, I don't think that they've had to really rely on Matt Bryant at all, in the last couple of weeks. It seems like they're going down to the red zone and they're getting touchdowns pretty consistently. And they're making these explosive plays happen that, you know, Kyle Shanahan really, really reveled in when he was here in Atlanta. You know, that's really how they got their points, was scoring from outside the 20. So I think when you look at what the offense is doing, they're really finally scheming ways to get around some of these better defenses, and they're better using the personnel. It's not flawless, because there's occasionally a moment where they try to run a sweep with like Calvin Ridley, and you're like, maybe that's not the best way to use him. Maybe there's a play where they kind of bunch some runs together, and you're kind of like, well, maybe you should have thrown a pass in there. It's not perfect. You know, there are still some wrinkles that need to be ironed out, but by and large, this is a good offense. And you look at the way that Sarkisian attacked PJ Williams and Ken Crawley, to the point where they had to put Marshawn Lattimore on Calvin Ridley. Obviously, Ridley had a huge day. His big exclamation point celebration to kind of arrive in Atlanta. That was just a wonderful day for him. But you just saw this offense really, I think, live up to the potential that it was going to have with Steve Sarkisian as coordinator. Because at the end of the day, the talent and the coaching was going to have to meet somewhere in the middle. Sarkisian was never going to come up with these just master game plans that would leave defensive coordinators scared to put guys out there. It was always going to be him using the pretty incredible talent that the team has effectively and scheming it properly. I think Greg Knapp in there is helping him be able to size up some of these defenses and their weaknesses. Obviously, they couldn't get the run going, but I give more credit there to the Saints scheming a good plan to really stop the run after watching what they did to Carolina. But then again, the Falcons counteracted. They made the move that's kind of that big chess game. They moved the guy in the right place to kind of attack the passing game and go after that Saints secondary. They've had some struggles. This is some of the stuff we weren't exactly seeing last year. And I think that now that the Falcons are being able to figure that out, it's more able to unleash what this talent is capable of. So I think it's a wonderful development for those that have been down on Sarkisian. And I think he's building together the kind of resume that may keep him here for a little bit.
Yeah, I hope he can sustain it. You know, one of the comments I made a week ago was like, we saw him come out lackluster in week one last year and then come out, you know, the offense looked really good in weeks two and three against the Packers and the Lions. And then they sort of went into, you know, a funk for a month and the Falcons started racking up losses. And my hope is that, you know, he's turned a corner, and I have real reason to believe that he has because of what you said. I feel like a lot of the areas where he was deficient last year, he's made real improvements in, particularly with in regard to sort of better utilizing players and putting guys in unique positions to succeed. You mentioned Calvin Ridley. I certainly think he was obviously the standout besides maybe Matt Ryan on Sunday against the Saints. And, you know, one of the things that I constantly complained about last year was sort of how the Falcons had poorly used Taylor Gabriel, and sort of he was used on jet sweeps and screens and the occasional deep ball, but whenever he went deep, Matt Ryan would miss the throw or whatnot. And I felt like, you know, with the addition of Ridley, the hope for me was that Ridley would be used in the way that I thought Gabriel should have been used. And I think on Sunday we did see him get those vertical routes. We did get to see him get some of those, you know, not jet sweeps, but end around types of runs. We got to see him use the shallow crosses and the intermediate dig routes and all those sorts of things that, you know, that full complement of a route tree that I just think was lacking with Taylor Gabriel last year. And I think was really sorely missing from this Falcons offense. You know, I'm a notorious Sanu hater. I think he's good at what he does, but I just think what he does well is just, you know, a sliver of sort of what you ideally want. And I think the hope is, with Ridley, you're going to see a much, you know, more varied asset and versatile weapon opposite Julio Jones that will be able to take advantage of these one-on-ones to the degree that we saw where, the, you know, he absolutely destroyed P.J. Williams and you know, to a lesser extent, King Crawley. And so I think those are reasons to be a lot more optimistic now in 2018 about this offense than necessarily in hindsight, looking back at the 2017 unit, where it still seemed to be a lot of Julio Jones, a lot of Devontae Freeman. And, you know, the biggest shift from 2015 to 2016 was basically the team not being that reliant on Julio Jones to have to carry the offense in 2016 due to their ability to spread the ball around to multiple assets, including Taylor Gabriel. And I'm hoping that these last couple of games where, you know, after a week one where Julio was sort of the only option for Matt Ryan, seemingly, we haven't really seen that be the case. And sort of we can pick and choose his spots for this point on. So I think those are the reasons why, you know, there's real hope and optimism, I think, that's valid that, you know, Sark has turned the corner potentially for this offense.
Yeah, I do too. I think that one of the big things you have to key in on is you look at last year and you look at kind of the defenses they played. The Lions ended up not having a great year. The Packers defense, obviously, we know now was really bad, and obviously they're missing a lot of pieces. We've played two pretty complete defenses. Obviously, you know, the Panthers had some secondary problems, and they did during the game. You know, they played against us, but, you know, I think the biggest thing to take away is, like, these are defenses Sarkisian was not good at scheming against last year. And, again, I know Steve Wilks is now in Arizona, and Eric Washington has taken over out in Carolina, but Dennis Allen had Sark's number last year twice. And that offense was just could not do anything against what the Saints had on defense. And, obviously, there was a lot of momentum that was building with that unit. But I think this year, you know, you saw Sark be able to scheme against two teams that he really was not overtly effective against last year. So I think you have to have some excitement there that even though it's early, like these are things he was improving on. And I think another thing you have to look at is Wes Schweitzer has been pretty solid. And I think that's another long-term thing that could be really effective for the Falcons.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, hopefully it goes well. It's kind of there.
It's a lot of we'll sees right now for the Falcons this season. yeah. as opposed to some of the things that we thought going into the year were a little bit more sure things. And speaking of a thing that's not necessarily a sure thing, we'll be talking about the Falcons defense coming up. But before we do, I want to let you guys know that Locked On NFL Podcast is becoming everyone's favorite daily national NFL podcast. Each week, you have a number of great guests joining host Matt Williamson to discuss all things NFL. On Monday, it's the local experts on the biggest stories of the week. Tuesdays, you get former NFL quarterback Sage Rosenfels. Wednesdays, there's Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus. Thursday, you have the great Mike Sando of ESPN. And Friday, make sure you tune in to get all of Matt's picks of the week. That's Locked On NFL Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Now, if you listen to this Locked On Falcons podcast, you know that I have most of the answers, not all of them, but the things that I often do not have the answers to is who is going to win each week. And that often involves my disappointment with the Falcons. But if you guys think you know who's going to win this week, then you got to check out my book. You remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And that's why I always tell people to go to MyBookie. They're the best bet that you'll make this season. Because they've been in business for years, they have great reviews online. Their mobile site is very easy to use. They have in-game live betting, over and under on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the biz. MyBookie is slammed with new bettors and wants to help you guys out by giving you a $25 free play if you choose to deposit $100 or more after 7 p.m. Eastern time. Use the promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate that offer. Go ahead, visit MyBookie today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON25 to get an extra $25 free play after you deposit after 7 p.m. It's up to you guys, but I'd wait until after dinner and get that extra money. You play, you win, you get paid. Okay, Corey, let's talk about the not-so-optimistic side of the Falcons team right now. With the Falcons defense. And yeah, man, it was not a great showing. Obviously, on Sunday, you give up 43 points in 4 3/4 quarters, I guess you would say, and going into overtime, not a whole lot of pass rush, a lot of breakdowns in coverage, a lot of missed tackles, just not a great performance. You know, couldn't get off the field in third downs, couldn't get stops in the red zone. You know, just they checked very few boxes. So I will let you speak, Corey, on what you want to talk about in regards to this Falcons defense.
Well, you know, it's really funny, and I hate to bring it up because I know bringing this up is kind of like taboo, always will be, but you know what that loss reminded you of, right? Like what that was like mirror for mirror was about the Super Bowl. I mean, that's exactly how they lost to New England, was because, you know, although offensively they were much sharper, you know, that defense just got gassed and broke down and could not withstand the talent deficiencies. And you saw that especially on that overtime drive. Like, it was almost like mirror for mirror what happened. Like, they just salted them down, and the Falcons couldn't get anything going. They were just gassed. They were exhausted. And, again, I hate that a coin flip basically put Ricardo Allen out for the year. I mean, obviously, if the Falcons win the toss, the defense may not play, and Atlanta may win the game, and we may not be talking about, you know, having to worry about this, which is just the, you know, unfortunate realities of what happens when you send your team to overtime. You just invite those things to happen. But, you know, I think defensively, everyone just needs to be very, very understanding of two things. One, right now, they're not good. And there's nothing they can do. There's no magic trade. If they really wanted to throw away some future assets, they could probably cobble this thing together and make it look pretty decent. But again, this is a forward-thinking franchise. They're not like everybody else in the fan base who thought that we had to win the Super Bowl this year. That's not on Dan Quinn's mind. Obviously, it's something they want to do, but they're not acting like the season is a make it or bust, where obviously, like, if 2019 rolls around, like, there's just no point to get out of bed. This is an organization that is trying to build talent for the next few years. They're trying to make this thing sustainable. They want to be a New England or a Pittsburgh or, you know, at a time a Seattle or just one of these, or maybe even a Green Bay, one of these teams that can come back every single year and compete. And that's what I think they're on the way to building. And I think when you look at the defense now, they're not going to go out and get an Earl Thomas. They're not going to go out and get one of these, you know, big marquee trades, you might hope. But at the same time, that means that right now they don't have a lot to work with, and it's not their fault, okay? Like, you know, they've done a really nice job of keeping guys healthy in the past couple of years, but sometimes in the NFL, it just happens. Like, there's just sometimes you walk under the ladder, you break the mirror, you just get unlucky with injuries. And I think what's hurting them right now defensively, like with what is working, is that, you know, they don't have much of a pass rush. And I don't know if that would have been different if they had more guys in the field, if Deepa was out there coordinating the communication. But right now, they're not getting any pressure on the quarterback that is consistent. They can get some, they may get a sack here or there. They may get a couple of hurries. But again, that's why you cannot trust the statistics. Trust the box score, okay? If your pass rush is working, the offense is not scoring a lot of points that you're trying to defend, okay? That's what happens with a successful pass rush. If the offense is scored 43 points, that means your pass rush didn't work. That means the quarterback had a ton of time to sit in the pocket and make plays. And Drew Brees barely got touched, okay? And I don't care how old he is or if you think he's on his way out. If you give him time, he will make plays all day long, all over you. And I think when you look at what's going on, Vic Beasley is not performing where he needs to. I don't think that means he's a bust. I don't like the conversation where, oh, he's a bad player or this or that. I know we may have some disagreements there. I still think he's good. I don't think he's great. I don't think he's bad. I think he's just good. I think he's a solid complimentary pass rusher. And when he has to be the main guy, it sets him up to kind of fail, because in 2016, this is a guy who a lot of teams were not suspecting was going to be a pass rush terror. And he was really good in 16. But again, like some folks will tell you, some of those stats were a bit inflated. He may have been more of an 8 to 10 guy in terms of the way he was playing, but he got some cleanup sacks. He had times where somebody else made the play, and he went in and got everything done. And it made his numbers pop up. Again, leading the league in sacks is pretty darn good. And you don't just do that if you're a bad player. But the big thing to know about the pass rush right now is that Brooks Reed can only do so much. He's a good, solid, rotational guy. I don't think he's a guy you want out there for 100 stats a game or anything or the entire time. But, you know, if I'm just trying to look at this unit, I think the problem is right now is that everywhere else you want production, they're struggling with injuries. The secondary with the corners still seems to be pretty good. The wide receivers really aren't doing a ton of damage on Atlanta unless they're playing in the slot. The way teams are beating Atlanta right now is with a ground game and with these kind of screen passes and, you know, things that help them get the running back elevated in space. So, and that comes with the talent deficiencies. It comes with not getting the quarterback any pressure on him. So I know this is a lot. I'm kind of giving you a bunch of ideas at once and kind of throwing them into your lap. But I think when you look at the defense right now as it stands, it's a bad defense. And I think there are good players on it, but it's just a bad unit right now. They can't stop anybody as the game goes on. And again, the Falcons made it to a Super Bowl with a defense that was kind of like that.
Yeah.
I mean, they were not good. And again, they got hot, and when Quinn was coordinating them, the talent kind of got covered up by some of the really good coaching, but it's not a good defense, and it's not Atlanta's fault. They had a lot of injuries, but this is just what happens. And when you don't have your starters on the field, you can't expect to really stop anybody, because when you're playing with a preseason defense, you can't stop a regular season offense.
A lot to unpack there, Corey. The first thing I'll say is, yeah, the reminiscent of the Super Bowl, when the Falcons and the Saints won the coin toss, I felt like tweeting something about, oh, seemed like we've been here before, but I felt like that would be too negative because, you know, people, I've been accused of being a little bit too negative at times. So I felt like that was maybe a sore spot to kick the Falcons fans while they were down on Twitter on Sunday. I'm with you. I think the pass rush is the glaring issue. I feel like they should make a trade, but I think you're right in the sense of there is no sort of magic bullet that's going to solve their problems this year. They're just sort of hopefully going to tread water until next season when they get to the offseason. I guess where I would advocate in something I mentioned on yesterday's podcast was that I feel like, you know, they need to make several steps. There is no, you know, unless they get a Khalil Mack, a Hall of Fame caliber pass rusher, I don't think one player is going to solve their issues on the pass rush. I think they're going to have to try to get a much deeper and better rotation in addition to upgrading, you know, some of the guys at the top of their pass rush. And I feel like, you know, if they can make a trade that can sort of take care of one of those spots now, and so that they don't have to deal with it come March, or they don't have to deal with it, you know, a year or two from now, then I think it's worthwhile doing. If that trade is not available, and again, I have no idea if that trade is available, then obviously you have to sort of figure things out. The last thing I'll say is on Beasley, I'm with you. I don't think Vic Beasley's a bad player. I've just been a big, you know, sort of proponent of the quote unquote theory that, you know, his production in 2016 was very inflated. I think his issue has been that he hasn't really progressed as a pass rusher in terms of his technique and his skill set since his rookie season. And I feel like that 2016 season was an outlier more so than necessarily a true reflection of his skill. And I feel like since then, people have sort of been expecting that player to sort of show up and walk through the door. And mm-hmm. from my perspective, I just don't think that player is going to happen, you know, at least in a reliable sense. It's not to sit here and say that there won't be sort of the, you know, the churning of variables and factors that will allow them, allow him to have another 12 to 15 sack season in the future, you know, because I expect Vic Beasley to play another like 7 years in the NFL. So it's certainly a possibility. I just don't think that's the player that you can expect to see week in and week out, at least the perception of sort of that, you know, that Khalil Mack, that Von Miller type of player that I think a lot of people thought he was coming off of the heels of that 2016 season. I think you're right. I think he's a complimentary pass rusher. I think he's a guy that can reliably get you six to eight sacks every year, maybe more in a good year if certain things fall into place. But, you know, obviously that has a lot more baggage given where he was drafted and the expectations in part due to that 2016 season. So there's a lot more to unpack there in terms of Beasley. And one of the things I've said on my podcast these last couple of days and weeks is that, like, you can't talk about Vic Beasley and all of those things in 10 minutes. It seems you really need like an hour to basically go through all that stuff. So I will leave it at that and, you know, move on from there.
Yeah. I think right now, I feel like everybody wants it just to be the way it was, and that can't happen. I think that's just one of the tough things about the NFL is that when these injury seasons hit, you just have to be willing to take what your team has and try to maneuver with it down the stretch. I think one of the biggest things that, you know, folks need to be aware of is that right now Atlanta's roster, the depth was good that they're able to kind of have so many in-house options, but at the same time, you're going to have to get out of your head that, you know, teams aren't going to be able to, you know, necessarily make these kind of plays that Deion would make or Keanu would make. Like, they're just a lesser team because of the injuries. And I hope that they can maybe get some scheming and better coaching, and Quinn can get more involved with the game plan in terms of trying to get some of these lesser talented guys more successful, which I think it could if he really, really felt it was necessary. But yeah, I think right now it's just kind of a wait and see in terms of, you know, what their ceiling and what their floor is going to be.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I think, you know, I wouldn't necessarily shut the door on this defense in terms of it playing better than what it looked like on Sunday. I certainly, my hope is that this was the worst defensive performance we'll see all year long. I think there's reason to think that. I think, you know, given the youth at linebacker with guys like Riley and Olakun, they should get better. We'll have to see sort of what Olakun's injury update is. We don't necessarily know quite yet. You know, the secondary, you know, dealing with the injury to Ricardo Allen, and we'll talk about that in further detail in a moment. But the hope is that, you know, Isaiah Oliver will be able to take more onto his plate as the season progresses. I think we all sort of think Alford and Trufant and these guys are high level guys. And I think Brian Poole is certainly more capable than what he showed on Sunday. So I think there's reason to be somewhat optimistic in the sense that we will see better days for this defense. But in terms of like this team, you know, sort of having that high level defense, I think that ship has certainly sailed. The minute that sort of Keanu Neal and Deion Jones went down to injury. But we'll have to see. You know, Deion Jones hopefully is coming back at some point this season. And, you know, maybe that reinvigorates them down the stretch when they may or may not need it to sort of perform better. So, it's not looking good. I think they certainly deserve their criticism for their performance on Sunday. I don't necessarily feel like we need to go full doom and gloom and start, you know, jumping off of bridges and whatnot. in terms of when we talk about this defense. But yeah, I think it's certainly clear that the offense is going to have to carry the team at least for the next month or so as they sort of navigate the many issues that they're facing on that side of the ball.
Yeah, well put.
We're going to talk about these injuries in just a moment, but first I want to let you guys know about the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. If you're one of those Falcon fans that feel like 2018 is creeping to a close, then why not get geared up for 2019 by checking out hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema of the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Corey, let's talk about the injuries. And we found out today that Ricardo Allen is out for the season with an Achilles tear, suffered on, I think, the second play of overtime. You sort of mentioned it, you know, what happens if the Falcons win the coin toss? You know, they probably get a three and out, and then I'm kidding. So it's one of those things where it's another devastating blow. You already lost Keanu Neal for the season. You've already lost Deion Jones for half the season. Foye Olakun suffered seemingly an ankle injury at the end of the game, didn't come back from what I could tell. And we'll have to find out the seriousness of that injury. You're dealing with Tack McKinley and Derek Shelby, dealing with groin injuries. Who knows when they're coming back? And of course, you have injuries on the offense with Devontae Freeman and his knee issue. He's officially day to day. I'm using air quotes. But, according to Adam Schefter, we've still got at least one more game that he's going to miss because he was supposed to be out 2 to 4 weeks or something like that. So we'll see when he comes back. I'm sure I'm forgetting another couple of injuries because there's just been so many. But sort of, you know, you mentioned it already in terms of, you know, injuries happen and sort of, you know, I talked about it. I'm sure you've talked about it where, like, the Falcons were I can't think of the word, but they seem to be very lucky in terms of avoiding injuries so far in the Dan Quinn era, and it seems like they're getting 3 years worth of injuries sort of all in 1 year. But how do you, you know, if you can further explain, how do you sort of deal with this, half the team's playmakers being in the training room?
Well, it's difficult, but I think this just happens. And I think that's just like, I can't remember who said it. I think Dave may have written something where he was like, we were all hoping that Atlanta, you know, was going to, everything we talked about was like, well, we got everything together, but the only thing that could stop us is injuries. And it's like, yeah, well, that's what happened. Injuries stopped you. There's nothing you can do about it. And I think that's the biggest thing that we haven't had to deal with in a while. But remember 2013. I don't think that 2013 team was nearly as bad as 4-12. But the problem is that Atlanta got exposed for its just rancid depth and its inability to really get coaching in to allow the talent that was gone to be able to miss. And that's why that era collapsed, was because they were not able to withstand injuries. And it wasn't nearly as bad as it was now. I think people really thought it was terrible, terrible. But I think obviously Sam Baker went down that season. Julio went down that season. And once that happened, it was kind of all over. And I believe they lost Sean Weatherspoon. But again, there were also a lot of personnel moves that they made that were bad, like replacing Steven Jackson for Michael Turner and OCU Manura from John Abraham. Like, it's a bit of a different situation because that team got exposed when they got hurt. I think Dan Quinn's Falcons are so hurt right now that there's really nothing to expose other than just bad luck. You look at where the injuries are. I think that's what matters. The defense has lost its three most important communicators. Deion Jones was not – the reason he's partly elite, it's not just because of what he can do as a physical player and with his tackling, with his coverage skills. Obviously, the run defense was beginning to get better. It's what he does with his brain and what he's able to do to get guys in proper position and help kind of lead that front seven. That absolutely has an impact on the pass rush because the defensive ends and the defensive tackles are trying to listen to what Deion's calling out, what coverages he's seeing, what different ideas he's trying to communicate with them. And that's what Ricardo Allen was doing in the secondary, okay? And when you don't have your two best communicators, and obviously Keanu Neal, who is so important against the run and kind of helping set the tone with physicality, but he's also a guy guy who's working on trying to communicate ideas. When you take the microphone out of your defense, it's going to look messy. And that was, I thought, the problem was Sunday. They just looked so sloppy. They just didn't know what New Orleans was going to do next. They were just letting big play after big play after big play, because once they finally caught their breath after this one, they got out-schemed and out-coached and out-communicated on another thing. And I think that's where you really have to adjust your expectations for the defense, but also realize that when these injuries set in to communicators, you are going to have to take a lot of time to get that fixed, because that is something that Deion had just grown into. Ricardo Allen had really grown into it. Keanu had really started to grow into it. The other guys are depending on those players to be able to call out the coverages and get them in proper position and know when they need to make audibles. When you put that on guys like Duke Riley and DeMonte Casey and Jordan Richards, I honestly think that Richards is probably the best one back there to be able to handle that, because Richards is actually a pretty smart player. But he's less physically gifted than those other two guys are. So when you put these jobs into people like, you know, those hands, obviously it's not going to look as good, and it may not look as good for the rest of the year. So I think when you look at these injuries, you look at what they've taken away, particularly from this defense. You've taken away the brain, and when you take away the brain, all you have is the brawn, and the brawn is not as strong without the brain. So, you know, I'm not saying that the guys in there aren't smart and that they can't pick up and do better, but there were reasons that Rico and Deion and Keanu were so good, and it wasn't just because of the way they played. It's how they communicated. So I think that is a huge part of Atlanta that has been taken away with these injuries. And I just don't know how you make that up.
Yeah. I think, you know, this is one of the things I've been harping on. It's like, I think the only thing that solves that is time and patience. Mm-hmm. That you just hope that, you know, with four or five or however many, you basically pull a number out of your butt, and how many more starts, you know, that Duke Riley needs or Foye Oluku needs or even Devondre Campbell, because that's not necessarily what he, you know, I think summarizing him as more of the brawn versus the brain, I think is a perfect description of sort of what Campbell is and has been to this team. And when you put him beside Deion Jones, that works perfectly, because mm-hmm. the brain part is taken care of. But when you put him against Duke Riley, you know, not to slight Duke Riley, who I thought played better on Sunday than we had seen mm-hmm. in the previous two games, but you know, it's just not going to function. And you saw that, and you saw a lot of communication issues. You saw a lot of those things on Sunday. And when you go up against, you know, an offense that has been as consistent as the Breeze Peyton offense has been, it's been the same offense for what, they're in year 13 now. So, mm-hmm. you know, they've gotten it down to a science. And if you're having issues on your side of the ball, then they're going to find ways to exploit that. And so, again, it goes back to what I said earlier, where my hope is that, you know, this will be the worst game for the Falcons defensively this season. We'll have to see. Obviously, they have some tough matchups coming up. Cincinnati is no slouch. Pittsburgh obviously has a plethora of weapons. Tampa Bay suddenly looks like, you know, the Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan level type of scoring teams. But we'll have to see how these teams do and this defense does in the meantime. But, yeah, I think you're right. The injuries are something that you're just going to have to deal with. And, you know, again, it goes back to what we said earlier. I don't think there is a sort of a magic bullet that's going to solve it. I just think the only thing that's going to help solve it is time. And you just sort of hope that you can tread water in the meantime as a team and organization. And I think, you know, I like this coaching staff. I think Manuel's good. I think Quinn is good. They're by no means perfect, but I think they'll find a way to sort of figure it out. So I don't feel as sort of, you know, if the offense was floundering, I wouldn't feel that confident given, you know, some of the skepticism and some of the issues that we've had with Sark over the last year. But with this defense, I feel like we'll get the best version of this defense. Now, that may not be a version that is good enough for a lot of people, and this probably won't be good enough for me, having to be forced to watch them week in and week out. But I do feel like, you know, they'll figure it out. I have a lot more confidence that they'll figure out something eventually.
Yeah, and again, like, I think you were right about the coaching staff, because people take for granted this is a very good staff. Like, comparatively to the rest of the league, like, Quinn is going to have this job for at least the next half decade, unless things just go completely to the side. I mean, he's a very talented motivator. He's very good at talent evaluation. He maintains a really healthy locker room. The guys really respond to him. And I don't think it's necessarily the same relationship folks had with Pete Carroll, because there seem to be some things working there behind the scenes. And again, I'm not saying that's not happening in Atlanta, but it seems to be a pretty amicable setup. So again, they're going to be in this conversation, at least we hope, for a while, at least for the next 3-4 seasons, as long as Matt Ryan and Julio Jones are still playing at a high level. But, you know, again, this is just one of those seasons where the injury luck caught up with them and they got stuck in the butt, and it's just, you know, it sucks, but you can't do anything about it. All you can do is just hope that what is still left is enough. And I think that right now the unfortunate but very true answer is we just don't know. There is just too much right now in terms of limited sample and guys getting experience. We just don't know what their ceiling is right now. And I think we can hope that it's a lot, but it's just dangerous to try to look at 2016 too much or look at 2013 too much and try to like use the past to chart out the future, because what we're going to get is something that we don't know yet.
Yeah. Yep. Every year is something different. So we'll find out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the positive you can say is, you know, no one wins a championship in week three.
That's true.
No one loses a championship in week three. You know, the season, there's a lot more season left to be played, and we'll find out what the Falcons do. And certainly, you know, I'll save the bulk of my criticism if we're like in week 11 and I'm like, why aren't the Falcons figuring this thing out? Like that, I mean, you know, we get like 8 weeks of just like the same old nonsense that, you know, sometimes happens, but mm-hmm. We'll see. Corey, I appreciate you coming on and talking Falcons with me, Falcons Saints. I hope to do it again, hopefully at a time later this season when things mm-hmm. are looking a little bit more positive. But until that day, let the people know where they can find you on Twitter, as well as what sort of things that you will be talking about on the Falcoholic podcast that, you know, may or may not include myself.
Maybe, maybe. You can find me on Twitter at CoreyWoodruff47. You obviously can find my work over at The Falcoholic in words that are hearable and readable, I guess, to try to mix up how you say I'm on a podcast and I write. Yeah, you know, I've got my columns that come out every week, and I usually do some news and some